Welcome to a Beast Game podcast. We'll be reviewing Stranger Things, which is streaming only on Netflix. It's created, written, and directed by Matt and Ross Duffer. The credits include Wayward Pines. It stars Winona Ryder as Joyce. Her credits also include Edward Scissorhands and Bram Stoker's Dracula. David Harbour, and he plays Sheriff Hopper. His credits include Black Mass, The Equalizer, and Suicide Squad. Finn Wolfhard as Mike. His credits include The 100 and Supernatural, and Millie Bobby, and she plays 11. And her credits includes Once Upon a Time. Synopsis: when a young boy disappears, his mother, a police chief, and his friends must confront terrifying forces in order to get him back. Just to let you guys know, this is a spoiler podcast, so you're going to hear spoilers. If you don't want to listen to it, you don't have to, but I would say listen to it anyway. All right, so Keith, what do you think about Stranger Things?
I thought it was fantastic. It felt like the way they marketed it, it was that it was going to be a mixture of Steven Spielberg and it take influences from Steven Spielberg's movies, Stephen King's, or movies that were based on Stephen King's work, and a mix up of The X-Files. And it was exactly that. The entire story was well told. It didn't lead you by the hand. This thing happened, a kid disappears. You see his disappearance, or you kind of get an impression of what happens to other disappearance. Plenty of suspense, and there's a lot of mystery behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a fantastic TV show. I mean, there's another Netflix winner that they have.
Okay. So, Barry, what do you think about Stranger Things?
All right. So, let me know if you guys agree with me that it's like a love letter to kids' journey movies from the 80s. So, what I have listed is Goonies, Stand By Me,
mm-hmm.
Gremlins, and E.T.
Yeah. Gremlins. The hell did Gremlins come from?
All right.
The one with like the 20-year-olds who were like...
they weren't 20-year-olds, man. They were like... They were older teenagers, but they weren't 20-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, they were like preteens.
They're probably like 17, 18, maybe.
But
I disagree with the Gremlins thing.
But also, just to get back on topic, it's like the X-Files, Millennium, and Silent Hill. Because there's times that essentially he goes into the other realm, or characters go into the other realm. That's kind of like Silent Hill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like a totally different dimension and whatnot. Yeah.
All right. I also put down period accurate clothing.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought the show is probably the best thing that Netflix has put out. And I'm talking, it's better than Daredevil. It's better than House of Cards. It's better than Orange is the New Black. It's for me to want to watch a TV show that I'm more into movies and not into TV as much. I invested 8 hours of my life and I was intrigued by the whole 8 hours. I wasn't bored, and the point that I thought I was going to get bored, where kind of how I fell off with Bloodlines, things picked up, things got interesting, and
right.
Characters have arcs that they learn and they grow. That
yes,
the mystery that of, I mean, before we get into spoilers, the mystery of like how it starts is interesting enough, and how it ends is just crazy. Go ahead, James.
To me, this is perhaps one of the best shows I've seen in a long time. And one, I don't watch TV shows. I'm all about movies. And to me, this is perhaps one of the best. It has to be the best I've seen. I mean, I recommend this to other people and they've enjoyed it. Like, to me, this is perhaps, it's just very reminiscent of old 80s movies. Like, I'm going to throw some more into the mix that Barry didn't mention. It kind of reminded me of Silver Bullet as well. Like a Stephen King movie with Silver Bullet. I think it had Corey Haim in it, and he was in a wheelchair with him and his sister. Yeah. It had that kind of feel to it. Definitely Stand By Me. I agree with you with that, because like the camaraderie amongst the four main kids, it just felt like that. To be honest, I have nothing negative to say. I only have one thing negative to say, but we're going to get into that a little later. Every main character and core character in this series had some type of development, character development. And that's very important for me. Every character, they grew some type of way. Like, if they were one way the first episode, by the end of the series, they were totally different. Just totally different. And to me, that just shows great writing. I was intrigued by it. I couldn't stop watching it. I started watching this late, and I think I may have watched it probably for like 5 hours. I took maybe an hour long nap and got right back into it, because I was still like, when I woke up, the first thing I thought about was like, let me finish this, because I was so just into the series. It was just so good. It was a mystery. It also reminded me of Twin Peaks, because it was a mystery of what happened to the kid. Like, in Twin Peaks, there was also a mystery of what happened to one of the main characters. Like, she's missing. Where did she go? And this is the same thing. Like, what happened to the kid in the very beginning, the one that ended up missing? Everyone was looking for him. So, like I said, this show kind of, it took the best parts of a lot of different genres and put them together into one. So it kept my interest. And like I said, there's very, very little to say on the negative side of this. I mean, I enjoyed it. Like, I'm actually going to probably watch it again because I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, I think I'm about to check it out again, because I'm pretty sure there's some things
that you may have missed. The character Mike. So what did you guys think about Mike? Like, from the very beginning, from episode one to the very last episode, which is episode 8. So what did you think about the progression of Mike, and what did you think about the character overall?
Oh, I made a comparison to Gremlins. And where I make that comparison at, and kind of E.T., where you kind of bring home a stray dog. That's kind of like what happened in Gremlins. It wasn't a stray dog, it was a gremlin. But the same thing happens in E.T. that he's trying to hide E.T. from his parents. So it's like he's trying to hide 11 from his parents, or L, and he's trying to get all his friends like, oh, you know, look what I brought home. And I thought his acting overall was pretty good. There were a couple of whiny moments where, because we made a comparison to some of the 80s movies, Stand By Me, where it was like, at some point, there's going to be infighting between friends. That happened one too many times, but it felt normal. It didn't feel like it was acting. It felt that...
Oh, yeah, that fight was going to happen.
It felt genuine. It didn't feel like it was forced. It felt like it was just very fluid, like it was just organic. Like, it really happened. Like, they sewed it well. They acted that out perfectly. Like, it was just, like I said, the kids had, so, like, their chemistry was just amazing to me. Keith, so what did you think about Mike?
In the beginning, I thought he was just like the rest of his kids. I figured he'd be kind of annoying, but at the same time, he felt authentic. When he first learns of Will's disappearance, it's kind of like he's basically to find him. And his interactions with his sister and his parents in regards to that, it felt like something that I would have done, trying to push that gravity of the situation. But like what I was saying, what I want to get out is that a lot of times when an adult writes for kids, he ends up making the kids sound like they're adults. It just comes off as way too mature, and the kids come off as completely unbelievable or just plain annoying. In this case, these kids had their lines were spot on perfect. Almost for a moment there, I felt like they were ad-libbing or something, or they just kind of like wrote the stuff themselves, or, you know, had an idea of it.
That still could be a possibility that they probably ad-libbed.
It definitely could. It's kind of like it went from, and all four of them, all those kids, they basically went from this whole thing. They had that solid mission to find Will. They meet the girl 11, and, you know, L, he takes her home, and, you know, he's thinking a way to find, you know, his friend. And that's their whole focus, is to find their friend. You know, I kind of felt, you felt the emotion when they got to the part where they saw, you know, Will's body and they pull out of the reservoir.
That was a sad moment. You felt that.
It was kind of, and that was well played out and well acted.
Okay, personally, I liked him. I liked the character. I definitely loved the progression of him. He was very whiny, but I mean, that's a kid. So, I mean, you expect children to be whiny. He did become the leader. I mean, I thought he was always the leader to begin with, because it seemed like they always kind of looked to him for guidance. But he became a stronger leader because of their goal. Like, at times, I believe that he may have got distracted by L, because he was just so enamored with her. But I mean, even with that being his like being enamored with her, he was still focused on trying to find Will. The emotion that he displayed when they saw so-called Will's body come out the lake, I mean, it was so genuine. I mean, I actually felt that. And it was, I mean, I actually felt sad. I was like, man, no. I was like, no, this can't be right. But what if it is? You know, this is sad, man. I mean, damn. So they went through all that and then come to find out that their best friend is dead. I mean, the emotion that he displayed even after they discovered the bodies, you could tell that it lingered on. And he did such a good job as just showing that. And then even when it progressed later on into the series, they knew that Will was still alive. He was even more determined to find out what was going on. And like I said, he did such a great job as that character. And like I said, I like the character. I mean, because the character to me was a genuine representation of early teenage boy. Let's talk about Elle next, which is the character 11. So what'd you think about her from episode 1 to episode 8?
Well, for me, I thought that her non-acting was very good. And I also thought...
Yeah.
I also thought that it was annoying most of the times because... And this is just for me, that there were times that she would say complete sentences and then revert back to just saying one word. And I just didn't understand that from a writing aspect. It's not a complete knock. I mean, at some point you need to progress the story forward, but I just felt that was a little annoying at times. But her kind of androgynous look was what was needed for her role. That at some point she looks awkward when she has to put on a wig and a dress, and she also looks awkward just with shade hair. That worked. And also just her, I guess, inactions again between her dealing with Mike, that she's friendly enough to deal with him and his friends, and also strong enough when she's around adults just to take over. So there's a point that she goes into a grocery store and she just kind of walks through and grabs stuff and like walks out. And it's not like, well, let me act like a little kid. She's just acting as a very strong person. So that's it for me.
Okay, what about you, Keith?
You can tell she doesn't trust people. And there was a point where she went to the grocery store. And it was after that altercation with the boys and stuff, where she kind of ran away. And it was, you knew she was angry and she was with herself and she didn't know what to do, and she has this power. You can actually see the guilt that she was going through, because towards the end of the series you realize that blames herself for everything that went down. Kind of in the beginning you don't know that she blames herself. The minute they start explaining to her what happened to her friend Will, she knows what happened to him, that he probably got up into that other world, or you know, even killed by that monster, and it was because of her and because of what she did or what she couldn't do inside of that isolation chamber. The whole way she was just kind of closed in on herself, that's just all that guilt that she was feeling. I mean, I definitely have to watch this again now. It was just clear. It's like, you know, as a kid, you know, you feel guilty about something. I mean, you don't sit around and, you know, brag about it or anything like that. She's like,
you basically take it inward.
Yeah, she wasn't scared of anything because she was, you know, she felt guilty, and anything that happened to her because of what she did or which, you know, what happened because of her. So when he discovered that Will was actually alive and that they needed to save him, that's when she started to come out of her shell. She could find Will and help him get him back through whatever that event was.
See, the thing I thought about Elle, I thought she did a great job, because there were times, I mean, of course, like we both said, that she really didn't have many lines. She didn't really say much, but her acting was done through her eyes. To me, that takes a certain type of skill to convey emotion just through your eyes and be genuine about it. I mean, people could do it, but just to act it out, especially if you're not going through that in real life, it's a talent. It's not something you can learn. And I believe she did a good job. And I agree with you 100%, Keith, that she felt guilty throughout the whole thing after they found out exactly what was going on with Will and everything. I mean, and she even mentioned it. Like, she mentioned it at the end. She basically sacrificed herself to save the children in the end. I believe that she feels guilty for one. She felt attachment to the boys because the boys actually are the only ones that showed her genuine affection. I would say even love. Because where she was at, she wasn't treated with love. She was just a test subject. They didn't show her any type of affection. If it was, it wasn't genuine. She felt genuine affection and love from those boys, especially Mike. Now, the other kids, not so much, but Mike, yes, she was really close to Mike, and she wanted to protect them because they became friends. So I believe she did a good job. I mean, it makes me want to check out her other works and see how she acts in those. But like you said, Keith, I definitely had to check it out again because I'm quite sure there are things that I miss, and I always try to watch something that I really like at least twice because I know that I've missed something. I believe that she was perhaps one of the best actors or actresses in this series because, like I said, she was acting without words.
I would beg to differ. I would say probably Winona Ryder.
See, that's the thing. Because Winona Ryder, she actually at the wild just started annoying the fuck out of me. But then...
Really?
Yeah. She started annoying the shit out of me, but then she did a great job as well. Because the thing is, I had to take myself out of the equation. Because I'm not a mother. I'm not a parent. So I don't know what that emotion would be when a child's missing. So I had to give her benefit of the doubt that is how... You know what? I take that back. She did do a great job because she was actually communicating with her son and no one believed her. At first, they thought she was crazy and she really wasn't crazy. So I can just imagine how that felt. So she did do a good job, but I still believe that the girl, 11, was perhaps the best actress in this because, like I said, she didn't really say much, but I still understood what she was trying to convey and I felt the connection without words. That's how I feel. I mean, there was not a weak link in this movie acting-wise. I said movie. In this TV series acting-wise. And to me, it felt like a movie. Because, it was just so good to me. This show was just so great.
Yeah, I think this format, the 8-show format, was best suited for this show. Just because if you try to put this into a 2-hour movie, 2.5-hour movie, it doesn't work. Things would progress way too much or way too quickly before you get it. And maybe by episode 3, I understood this is a great show. Like, this is why things are happening and progressing the way that it's progressing, just because the acting, the overall kind of mystery, is it supernatural, is it science fiction, is it otherworldly, is it aliens? It just worked.
I say it felt like a movie to me, but I mean it wasn't. That's why I keep slipping up and calling it a movie.
This seemed like if this was an AMC show, it would have been, oh, this is the great another AMC show, but this is Netflix, and Netflix does have a good series of great shows. AMC had Mad Men, Walking Dead, shows like that, and if that was on there, sometimes AMC has short format shows that people would be amazed by how great the show is, but again, it's on Netflix, so sometimes people might just overlook it in order to look at reruns of some other stupid show.
Right. It was just a great show. And the way that Netflix had, like, you know, put out the TV shows that they basically put out the whole season is fucking genius. Especially for a person like myself that I cannot stand watching TV shows because I'm not very patient when it comes to TV shows. Like, if I watch an episode and it leaves on a cliffhanger, I want to see immediately what's going to happen next. I don't want to wait a week.
I agree.
Don't want to wait 2 weeks. And God forbid it be a season finale.
It's that emotional investment you have to make into a TV show to want to come back, to want to say, well, if it's a standard TV show. It comes on every Tuesday, and every Tuesday at 8 o'clock, I need to be sitting in front of a television. But the way this works, you just want to watch it. You watch it the way that you want to watch it. If you want to watch it all the way through, you do it.
Right. Right. If you want to take a break, like wait a couple of days, you can do that. You have options. Just like, you know, when you watch a TV show on regular television, or you have to wait a week, or wait 2 weeks, or wait months. No, I don't have time for that. And plus, especially if, like I said, if it's a season finale, I'll lose interest. Like, I'll totally probably forget when the season is going to like start back up, and I'll just lose interest. I mean, that's happened to me on several occasions with television shows on network TV. It just, I lose interest. But this one kept my interest. I watched it all the way through. Probably lost some hours of sleep because I was just so invested into it. It was just so good. All right, so we're going to talk about the other characters. What did you guys think of Dustin? Dustin was, I would say, in my opinion, was a comic relief of the show, like amongst the main characters, amongst the boys. He was a comic relief. I would say out of all the children, he probably did not, in my opinion, he did not grow as much as everyone else, because he was the same. He grew a little bit, but he still grew, but not as much as Mike did, not much as 11 did, definitely not as much as Lucas did. And we'll talk about Lucas a little bit later, but Dustin was the comic relief. He made things. I mean, he was a typical kid. He wasn't whining. He wasn't whining in my opinion, but he was the one that's always trying to crack jokes. He was the comic relief. He was a comedian out of the bunch.
Well, in an 80s movie, he would be the redheaded kid that gets stuck in the fence.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I like that he actually
he was Chunk. He was Chunk.
Yeah, I liked how they took that whole thing where not just saying it's about him, but all of them contributed to the entire series as a whole. But he kind of stepped up as the guy who was like, he'd be the science whiz at the end of the series or something like that. I mean, when he cobbled together that compass and came up with the idea about the compass and stuff, I'm like, that was actually pretty clever. He was the one who kind of made the leap of faith, ultimate dimensions, and said, well, why don't we just ask the science teacher here, like, if it's actually possible and see what they can do about it.
Yeah, it's the branching universe theory from Star Trek.
Exactly. And he kind of just stepped in and like kind of being the science kid, the comic relief. He kind of like just contributed immensely to moving the plot forward.
Yeah, that was his progression. Okay, so Barry, did you have anything you wanted to add about Dustin?
Thought his acting was on par with how the show needed to progress.
That's it.
Yeah, that's kind of, I also said that if this was the '80s movie, that's the type of character he would play. He'd be the one with the freckles and the striped shirt.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about one of my favorite characters, Lucas. What did you guys think of Lucas? Okay.
I thought his Dungeons and Dragons skills were off the hook.
Oh, man. Yeah, they were into that game, boy. I've never played that game.
That might have been me. I remember playing Dungeons and Dragons.
I never played it.
Could never find anyone to play that with me, so.
But I thought at some point when he discovered that Elle wasn't as truthful as she appeared to be, that at first people didn't want to believe him, and that relationship, when they kind of stopped talking or had to shake on it, worked for the show. Because, again, this seems like a love letter to 80s movies, and that would happen, that two characters that are best friends would
have a falling out.
Yeah,
I personally liked him for the simple fact because to me, I see him in me.
If someone had to, they actually fit into Lucas's character, because like he was the one who kept trying to keep them all on point. It was like he was the first one. When Mike said, like, we need to find Will, and he was like, yeah, we definitely got to go. And he was always there. But at the same time, a friend gets a girlfriend. Everything together. Then all of a sudden, one of your friends wants to go off with his girlfriend. I'm sure you've all, like, I know I've experienced it. One of your friends kind of gives you kind of the cold shoulder because of it or something like that. You kind of decide to spend most of your time. If you spend most, if you've been around.
No, Keith, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, fine. His reaction seemed natural to me. And basically, his friend was kind of like going with this girl who they didn't know anything about, and he was jealous of that.
No, see, I disagree with you. I don't think he was jealous of that. He was just focused on getting Will back. He felt that Mike was just too enamored with Elle, which he was, but he was still focused on getting Will back like that to him. And plus, he didn't like Elle to begin with because he felt that she was weird. He felt that she was off. Something was wrong with her, which he was correct. There was something wrong with her. She was kind of off. And the thing about it, he was losing his best friend. Huh?
I said, plus he was losing his best friend.
Well, see, I didn't see it like that. He's wanting to find Will. I didn't see it like that. I just saw that as, look, I think you're getting off the goddamn goal. Let's go towards the goal. You focused on this chick that could probably just, like, she just came out of nowhere. You don't know who she is. You know, but I mean, I can see how I can see how people would think that. I don't see it like that. I just see this that he was focused on the main objective, and that was to find Will.
Well, his character was also the one when they allegedly found Will's body to be like, "Hey, he's dead. Move on."
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was like that. But the thing is, I mean, because you didn't think anything was really going on after that. I mean, he didn't think that it was just, he just thought it was open and shut case. Like, okay, well, he's dead. You know, we got to move on. We can't dwell on it. Like, the body's right there. And if I remember correctly, that when the fall now happened between them two after that?
Yeah, I want to say it was brewing. Maybe an episode before that, just because, again, from my perspective, that he and Will were becoming less of friends because of L.
Right. See, I mean, I mean, you could be right that.
Well, think about this. L, like, kind of convinced him that they could find Will.
Mm-hmm. And they felt that she lied.
Actually, they all did. They all felt he was
but flat, the person that was hurt the most was Mike. I mean, he was like, he kirked down on her. I mean, like, she was about to cry. He had the closest bond with her. And like you said, Keith, she felt guilty. Like, she knew what was going on. She felt guilty. And then to add insult to injury, her best friend, the person that showed her the most affection, was getting into her ass. Like was giving her a hard time. So right now she's kind of feel like she probably felt alone, because after that happened, she kind of kept to herself and was still trying to reach Will to prove that he's still alive. He's this. I know I could find him. Like, just through the walkie-talkie. So I mean, she kind of secluded herself after that, but she was still determined to try to find Will because I mean, she knew how much Will meant to them. So we're going to talk about Joyce Byers, and this is Winona Ryder's character. This is the mother of Will. What do you guys think about her?
I thought her dissension into what appeared to be madness was completely relevant to how someone in that position would act if their son or daughter disappeared.
Mm-hmm. I think she did a good job, but the thing is, I thought that she was becoming annoying after a while, but then I retracted my statement because I can't relate to the emotions that her character was going through. So, and maybe it was genuine, but after a while, I just felt that, like, okay, all right. Just, it's like, she's just becoming really neurotic. But then you got to understand that when you're seeing something no one else is seeing and people are calling you crazy, of course you'll be a little neurotic. You'll be like, but I know I'm not crazy. And you don't know how that would make you feel. I mean, she did a great job. And the thing is, like, I think the last time Winona Ryder was in something was, to my knowledge, Black Swan?
She was in the 2009 version of Star Trek. She was Spock's mother. People thought that she was completely too young to be Spock's mother. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
She's old enough to be his mom, isn't he?
Possibly.
She just looks good for age.
Well, last thing I remember her in was Black Swan. That was like 2010.
Yeah, I want to say that did come out after Star Trek.
So it's been a minute for her, and you know, it's actually great to see her because she's not a bad actress. It's actually great to see her doing something and doing a pretty good job, because I think ever since she had her little incident with the whole shoplifting thing, she was kind of blacklisted in Hollywood. But it's great to see her back and doing well. She did a great job. I did believe that she was a mother that was
in pain,
losing her mind a little bit.
I mean, she was in pain. She lost her son, and her other son was becoming distant from her, and her children was her world. Her husband was a non-functioning father.
Right.
I agree with you, Barry. She was the way she, the whole smoking and the way she picked up the phone and just started going off and stuff. I could completely just see it, and she did a good job with that. It was kind of hard to put Winona Ryder as being a mother because she looked young. She didn't look her age at all.
Yeah, I mean, she still looks pretty good. She still looks pretty good.
Yeah, she looks pretty good. You know, she doesn't look like she's in her 40s at all. But she did a fantastic job. I saw her interactions with her son, Jonathan. Two were kind of playing off each other perfectly. Yeah, it was like a sort of a descent into madness that she was going through. But there was almost like a purpose to it. I didn't feel that she was going insane. I mean, I can see from an aspect, you can kind of feel it because the kid Will wasn't dead, you know, he was somewhere else, and there was something definitely odd going on around there. It was pretty fantastic. I wasn't annoyed by her character at all. I thought she was I look forward to seeing more.
Well, screw you guys then, okay?
No,
screw you
guys. I can see where you were coming from, James. Just like how at certain points I was possibly ignored by Elle, the same way her acting could also be perceived as annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree.
Thank you. I don't want to be alone on this. She, like I said, she did a great job. And just after a while, I was like, okay, all right, all right. Okay, all right. We get it. I got you. I understand. But this is probably also me being the insensitive asshole I could be at times. But still. okay, so moving on. So now we're going to talk about Sheriff Hopper, played by David Harbour. What did y'all think about him?
I think that his character grew the most between Joyce's son and Hopper, because Hopper could have just been a one-note character where I don't believe you. You should just accept things and just kind of move on. And his character could just have been written off, and no one would have thought anything differently about it. But him eventually believing Joyce, him finding the courage to either break into places, or he had a tendency to knock people out like one punch people, like One Punch Man. But
oh shit, okay, go ahead.
But his tendency to want to believe, to want to explore and not take things on the surface, his character, maybe for the first three episodes, believe that. But it was the point that he went to investigate Will's body. I was like, all right, well, he found his body. He just kind of paused for a moment and then was like, oh my God, his body's here. And then he noticed that things didn't add up, and he was just full of cotton. I was sitting there like, wow, this is insane. I mean, this is X-Files level of insanity, because in X-Files that would likely happen, and then there would be some casual explanation about why that is. But I felt that his character grew the most, again, from not believing to believing to also sacrificing himself. There's some things towards the end that I kind of questioned with him, but again, I believe his character and Jonathan's character grew the most out of anybody.
Mm. All right, Keith.
I disliked his character at first. But after he started taking it seriously and you kind of saw his backstory, he became probably behind L and Jonathan as my favorite character on the series.
I agree.
And I think this is a credit to with the show being only 8 episodes. If this had been 20 episodes long, I mean, we can touch on this later. If this show had been 20 episodes long, I don't think it would have been as good as
no,
it was.
Hell no.
No.
You had one or two episodes of them being, okay, we got it. He's a freaking bore. He's a drunk and he's got emotional issues. Then we got right to the meat of the story. No one in this show made a dumb mistakes, but there were mistakes I would have made. Nobody did something completely just stupid. You're just like, what are you thinking?
I would probably say some of the lesser minor characters did, but...
Yeah.
Side, I would say the diner guy owner just opened the door at night like that to some strange lady. You know, that was a mistake, but this is the 80s. I'm pretty sure he didn't think she was going to whip out a pistol and shoot him in the forehead. So, but yeah, I mean, in this case, like, he was on point. He was picking up clues. He was kind of like, this don't look right.
Right. His instinct. And plus, he was driven by his, like you said, his backstory, because he experienced that drove him to figure out what the hell is going on. That made it even more interesting for him. And that also made him grow, because like you said, when he first was introduced, he was like, okay, he's the town sheriff and smokes a lot, drinks a lot, so like he's kind of an asshole. So I didn't expect to see much. I kind of expected him to kind of like dismiss the case and be like, you're crazy, you're crazy woman, don't worry about it, he'll come back home. And he even said that, but then after a while he started to actually dig deep within himself from past experience and dig deeper into the case, which he actually opened up the case. And I'm still not 100% sure what went down between him and the so-called government or whatever. Like, what went down? Like,
yeah, I think that's
he made a side deal with something.
Yeah, because I guess it was the last episode, the next to last episode, when they allow him to go into the other dimension. That I think I might want to save this for the wrap up, but there were a couple of things with him towards the end, the very last episode, the very last few minutes of the episode, that I want to question. But so I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. All right. So now we're going to talk about you guys. You said you like this character, you like him. Talk about Jonathan. I want you guys to dig a little bit deeper on Jonathan. So what'd y'all think about Jonathan from episode 1 to the end? What'd you think about him?
Well, I think he had the typical older brother, younger brother relationship that he sort of always teaches the younger brother. He's looking out for his younger brother. And when Will went missing, he tried to do the right thing. And then when reality, or what was perceived to be reality, set in, he accepted it and his mom didn't. And at the point that he knew something was wrong, Nancy mentioned that, hey, well, my friend went missing just like your brother. And that's when it clicked for him. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, you, Keith?
Jonathan is my number 2 character, favorite character. And as an older brother, he resonated with me, like that kind of aloofness and not kind of like worried about what his younger sibling is doing and having his own things to deal with was on point. And I figured that he kind of fade into the background as this would be some kind of kids focused movie, TV show. You got me doing it, James.
Because it feels like a movie, man.
It has the flow of a movie.
I forgive you.
But a very... Okay.
When he realized his brother was actually missing, I would have felt that. I felt that. I mean, when he broke down with his mom, he was trying to figure out what to do. He's like, he flat out blamed himself. It was his fault. It was like, yup, I've been in that situation. I've been in that whole situation where you just like something happened and you're just like, you know, if I came home a little earlier, like this wouldn't have happened. And like, you kind of like, you can't feel that way. You can't think that way. It was wrong. But at the same time, I'm like, that's exactly how I felt. But after episode 3 or 4, once he took that photo and he realized some Jack was running around out there, and he realized that that was the thing that probably killed his brother. It was on. It was done. He made every play. I'm like, right. That's right, buddy.
The thing is with that, he became determined, and that's why I said this reminded me of Silver Bullet. When he found out what possibly took his brother, he was determined to kill it. And that's exactly what happened to Silver Bullet. Like, when they found out about the guy being a werewolf, they were determined to kill him. Same thing. Set traps, did everything possible to try to kill him. And he grew. Like, he grew. I agree with you guys. He did grow the most. He was just like, he'll come home. Don't worry about it. He was very nonchalant, very passive. But then once he found out that this was a little bit deeper and a little bit more sinister than what he thought it was, he flipped a switch. He was ready to go. He's like, all right, I'm going to find my brother. I'm going to kill this thing that possibly took my brother. It's on. Like, he was like, I'm setting traps. I'm doing this. I'm doing that.
Yeah, it wasn't some stupid thing. I'm going to get a gun and I'm going to chase it with a knife. No, they would set traps and what was going to happen.
He was determined. And the thing about it, and he actually was so determined, like him and Nancy, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, to find out what was going on, because Nancy also experienced the same thing that he was going through with a friend of hers also being missing. So they had that bond together. And also, I actually was thinking that there was some type of relationship, some type of mutual because of mutual pain. Sometimes mutual pain brings people together, and that's what brought them two together. So, nice little segue. Since we're talking about Nancy, let's talk about Nancy a little bit deeper. What do you guys think about Nancy? Now, I'll start off with this one. I thought Nancy was basically the typical teenage girl that had the hormones going, and she wanted to be popular in the very beginning. She wanted to be popular. She was a smart girl. So I'm not going to say a nerd. I'm not going to say that. But she was very smart. She did well in school. But she wanted to be part of the cool kids crowd. So she hooked up with a popular guy in school. And she was just enjoying life. But she was probably doing some things that was probably frowned upon. But still, I mean, she was enjoying that status. And she probably kind of just like, it seemed like what was mentioned by Dustin very early into the series is that she was cool with her brother. And she even mentioned it later on. She was cool with her brother, Mike. But then they kind of grew distant, which happens. This happened with me and my sisters, as a matter of fact. Me and my sisters were real close. But then she got older and she wanted to do her own thing, and me and her grew distant because, I'm a younger brother, so she did her own thing, which is understandable. But at times, I think in this series, she regretted that, especially after what happened with Will. She started to regret that. And then in addition to what happened to Will, what happened to her best friend when she was out with her cool friends now, trying to hang out or do whatever, that kind of brought her and Jonathan together, because Jonathan was basically snooping and taking pictures, and he took a picture of her. That all started the relationship between those two, because he took the picture that actually caught the monster or whatever the hell it was, caught the monster in the picture, and basically was actually the point in which she and him knew something a lot darker was going on that took his brother, Will, and took her friend. So she grew as well, because at that point in time, she didn't care about being a part of the cool kids. She was worried about her friend. And she also gave her boyfriend, the popular guy, a hard time, Steve, because he didn't seem to really care about her friend being missing, or he didn't think it was that serious, but she did, and he wasn't very supportive of that. And she kind of grew towards Jonathan because, like I said, mutual pain can basically get people together, can create a relationship. So that's what happened with that. And I mean, it was still kind of odd to me at the end when they were still kind of bunged up, her and her popular boyfriend, which is very odd. I thought that would have ended.
Well, it kind of went that way because, like, he actually stepped up himself. I mean, he came back. you kind of saw which way the wind was blowing in that direction. I mean, it had been far too cliched if the two had ended up together. Yeah. And plus, it's not over, so.
Right. That's true.
Good point.
What I felt about Nancy, the only negative I have about her character is that a lot of the drama between her and her parents was a little forced.
I saw it as being a teenage girl type of thing. I mean,
it got a little whiny at certain points.
She was whiny as shit. Yeah.
again, like, what 16, 17 year old is not?
Nah, man. That was excessive.
But the relationship between her and Barbara was fine. And again, everything with this takes cues from movies from the 80s. The relationship with the college jock, or in this case, the cool guy Steve, that is something that, again, would happen in an 80s movie. That you have kind of the nerdy friend, the ugly friend. That also would happen in the 80s movie. So, I thought that her acting, aside from the parents, her interactions with Steve and her interactions with the other characters that Steve was friends with, was above average.
So, hold on. So, was there anyone that you thought was below average?
Just some of Steve's friends. So, again, some of the lesser characters. Mm-hmm. Kids that were harassing Mike.
And the boy that pissed himself.
Yeah. So it was like some of that. But again, that interaction between them that happened in the rock quarry seemed like something that would have happened in Stand By Me, or something that would have happened in any other 80s movies, that the bully comes back at the most inopportune time.
Okay.
Saying that they weren't good is at the level that the show is at, is that they are average, which would make them above average for any other TV show.
All right, so Keith, did you have anything you want to say about Nancy anymore? Did you want to say?
The shit hit the fan. She helped develop the plan. You know, it's kind of like, so she went forward from there. So
for the X-Files, the thing is, I want to believe. And anybody that believed in what happened believed 100%. And they were completely in to fix the problem or to figure out the mystery.
Yeah, especially after they saw that picture. That picture was the callous to, like, okay, yeah, this is real. This is real. Yeah. We need to do something about this. All right. So let's go ahead and wrap this up. So what are you guys' final thoughts on Stranger Things? Keith, let's start with you.
Thought that the movie was a
TV show, man.
If this had been on regular network TV, this show would have been butchered. Butchered and, like, maligned and just trashed.
This would have been CW Netflix garbage.
Is the only one that actually did. If it was on HBO, it'd have been way too much sex. If it had been on FX, it wouldn't have had the budget to pull off what it was trying to do. Netflix, it was a perfect location for the show. Mm-hmm. And that it was 8 episodes instead of 22, like it would have been on a network TV show.
Or
like
even 12 or 13, that is the Netflix format.
Yeah, see, that was perfect.
Told the perfect story. It told a straight story. It had the moments. It had those Steven Spielberg moments. I call it the Spielbergian Oz type moments and stuff, with the kids running around being kids and, you know, being in this kind of not necessarily magical adventure, because, like, there was a lot of horrific shit that went down,
which I love.
But for me, it was that moment that they were riding their bikes. And Elle basically lifted the van over top of them. That is a Spielbergian moment.
Right. All right, Barry, what about you?
All right, just to throw some things at you. I like the effect when Eleven was on the other side, that just complete blackness, because she went into an isolation tank. So that makes sense that everything would be black. The way the show ends leaves a lot of unanswered questions. Obviously, they need to answer those questions.
Yes.
in season two. One thing that I felt was that it wrapped up too neatly. It goes on a little bit longer. So you have Will being in the hospital and everybody's kind of rallying around him. Hey, Will's awake. All right, that's great. And then it continues on from that point for maybe like another 10 minutes. So I just felt that when life kind of went back to normal for certain people after the event or the series of events that happened, people were still disappearing. No one's actually really looking for them. But
yeah, I was about to say, I'll get to that too. Go ahead.
But
Man.
Just kind of the last things that I want to say is mainly with Hopper. Again, he gets approached by the shadowy organization that is the cause of all of these problems. And I would like to know what happens with that.
There should be one cliffhanger. There shouldn't have been like seven.
Yeah. And then you also have Hopper leaving food in the woods in a box. So
not
11,
just food.
11 likes Legos. Or Eggos.
Eggos, yeah.
Yeah, not Legos, which might like Legos. He's leaving Eggos and some other things that she likes. I'm like, is she dead? Is she still alive? I guess, yeah, all that would be answered in another season.
Episode of Stranger Things.
But those are my thoughts.
The way it ended, it left so many unanswered questions. Like, for example, like Will was back, everything was normal, but then he threw up some type of parasite.
Yeah, I think it was like a slug or something.
Yeah, and
the
then
same
like
slug that crawled out of Nancy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then he starts seeing the upside down world or whatever it's called. Okay, so what exactly is going on? Like, it just made me question more, and also made me question what's going on with Hopper, because like you said, Bear, I mean, he had to make some type of side deal, and we don't know what the side deal could have been. We have no clue, but he just got in the car like, I'm going to call them the government because it probably was government. But anyway, he got into the car with them, and you saw his face. He was kind of like, damn, I got to get in this car. I made a deal. It's like he really didn't want to get in the car. It was just like.
And also at that point, he probably should have gave up smoking, going through all the stuff he just went through.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When he started to die of cancer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess cancer. On the 80s, you might have had Surgeon General's warning on the side of his pack of cigarettes.
No, but he would have quit smoking to like because his daughter would have been susceptible to that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. But I mean, well, let's slide.
And then, you know, like I said, still the mystery is Elle still alive because she basically disintegrated. Like, when she killed the monster, she disintegrated.
Yeah.
So, is she still alive? And if she is still alive, how is she still alive? And also, it's a mystery of where the hell did she come from?
Well,
they explain where she came
like,
from.
Like, is she just a kid that just has abilities and they just happen to do experiments on her? Or is she from the world?
Well, I mean, they kind of explain it that her mom, Jane, or was the mom named Jane? I think.
I don't know her mom's name. They were doing the MK Ultra program for like that
psychological drugs and. Her daughter just kind of developed. Yeah, her daughter just kind of developed some telekinesis, whatever powers.
She was pretty badass, and the thing is,
they refer to her as the X-Men at some point.
Right. That's why this first thing came to mind. Like, she's Jean Grey out this bitch. This first thing came to my mind. She's Jean Grey, but the thing is, like, her powers are very limited. She'll have some type of side effect, either like she'll pass out from exhaustion or her nose will bleed or something. I loved it. It did leave a lot of questions, and I'm looking forward to season two, and this is the part that I was mentioning earlier. It's like left on a cliffhanger, and I'm pissed off because I gotta wait months until figure out what the hell's going on. So right now we're gonna do the scores. I'm gonna start off. I give this, I can't believe I'm about to say this, I give this show, this series so far, this first season, I give it a 9. Just because I was just so enamored with it. The acting was on point. The story was on point. There was nothing negative about it. But to add on to what happened to Barb, why is it that nobody was looking for? Or they didn't make it known that somebody was looking for it. It's like, oh, she's gone.
That is true. That is true. Because
it's like,
at some point they said they found her car and she was at a bus station. And that was it.
Right.
That was kind of the end of her
arc. In her story, but you know, no one's following up on that like they did with Will. It just seemed like, okay, well, she just left town. Yay.
Her mom wasn't determined enough.
Right. Exactly. But outside of that, like I said, I give it a 9. All right. So, Keith, what is your score on Stranger Things?
It wasn't perfect, but I will give it a 9 as well. I look forward to, I watched it straight through. Like, I started one episode at like 11 o'clock at night, got through about 3 of them, woke up next morning, watched it all through there with a big bowl of cornflakes, and just like watched the rest of it. I killed the whole series within a day.
You had your pajamas on too, Keith?
Yeah. Yo, don't worry about what I'm wearing, all right? That's a little creepy. All right, but it was basically like I killed it. I did. I watched it.
You're making it creepy, Keith.
Through no interruptions, it was a fantastic show. It was, like I said, perfectly timed. 8 episodes. Each episode progressed the story. There was no filler, no BS downtime to try and draw it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it told a story and it told it in the episodes that it wanted to tell it in. The only downside is like a couple of little tweaks I gave it, and the fact that it had like 8 different cliffhangers going on for every little plot hole, for every plot point they didn't get to.
Right.
It's kind of like as a cliffhanger itself, which was unnecessary. They could have just left it alone because we know it's going to be back. There's no question about that. It's
too
pretty
popular not to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. They could have just left it with the L cliffhanger, like him just leaving food in the woods. And that would have been it. That would have been fine. And then left all the other stuff, like, you know.
Yeah, just as alone instead of just kind of making the Will
throwing up a parasite. That could have been season 2. First episode of season 2.
Exactly. Yep, I agree.
All right, Barry, you're up. So what do you think about Stranger Things?
I also give the show a 9. I had stated earlier that this is one of Netflix's best shows. Again, people like House of Cards. People like Orange is the New Black. I like Daredevil and Jessica Jones. This is far and beyond, way past those shows. The way that it's written, the direction, the characters. I will also say that I did have some nitpicks about some minor characters, but those nitpicks are very minor in the grand scheme of how the show is. So, in short, I'll give this a 9. It is Netflix at its finest.
Mm-hmm.
People should watch the show. If you are a fan of X-Files, if you're a fan of Millennium, if you're a fan of something supernatural, if you're a fan of science fiction, if you're a fan of the 80s, you should watch this.
Right. Show, I mean, it's so, like movie. I say, like you're saying right now, there's so many genres mixed into this show. It's like it's so broad of a spectrum that it will probably please a lot of people. That's what's so great about this show. But we're going to go ahead and end the podcast. So that's been a Beast Game podcast. You can find more on our podcast at beastgame.com, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and YouTube. So that's it for us. See you on the next podcast, guys.